Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Om Vishnupad. Paramahansa Parivajakacharya, Astadadasata, Sri, Srimani's Divine Grace, A.C., Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Harinam Sankirtan Ki, Nithai Gaur Premanandi, Glories to the Assembled Devotees, Glories to the Assembled Devotees, All Glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyanajana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sigurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadanti Svam Padantikam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Gadadara Sivasari Yoda Bhaktivindam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Today is the final topic in the series of five topics, which are under the heading of the five most powerful, most potent forms of devotional service, which are chanting the holy names, worshipping the Lord in His form as a deity, associating with devotees, hearing and reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and now residing in holy places. So this one's a little bit interesting because we have to see exactly how to understand the glories of the holy place in relationship to, you know, the actual definition of what a holy place is. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata bhutanam adharmasya tadatmaham sujamyaham. He comes to establish religious principles, to kill the demons, and to associate with his devotees, or to give his devotees his association. And when he comes, he also brings his entourage, his devotees with him. He brings his paraphernalia for worship, but he also brings the Dham. So the Dham is a feature of the absolute truth. Sometimes we say Krishna is non-different than His name, it's non-different than His form, it's non-different than His qualities, it's non-different than His pastimes, it's non-different than His pure devotee, He's non-different than His paraphernalia, and He's also non-different than His transcendental abode, not only in the spiritual world, but also that abode descends with the Lord to this material world. And it's explained in the scriptures that the abode that the Lord brings is non-different than this abode in the spiritual world. There's no difference. But how to realize that? It's not something that is understood simply by theoretical philosophical knowledge, nor is it can understood by simply by residing in the Dham. One has to have a certain consciousness. And we'll read some statements regarding the holy places, just to give us a little understanding of the holy place. Here it's a statement from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Vidura was purified of all passion by wandering in sacred places. And at last he reached Hardware, where he met the great sage who knew the spiritual science and inquired from him. Sonaka Rishi therefore asked, what more did Vidura inquire from Maitreya? Prabhupada's purport is what we're interested in. Here the words Virajas Tirtha Sevaya refers to the Vidura, who was completely cleansed of all contamination by traveling to places of pilgrimage. In India, there are hundreds of sacred places of pilgrimage, of which Prayag, Hardwar, Vrindavan, and Rameshwar are considered principal. After leaving his home, which was full of politics and diplomacy, Vidura wanted to pure himself by traveling to all the sacred places, which are so situated that anyone who goes there automatically becomes purified. So Prabhupada gives a little simple concession. If you go there, become purified. This is especially true of Vrindavan. Any person may go there, and even if he is sinful, he will at once contact the atmosphere of spiritual life and will automatically chant the names of Krishna and Radha. That we have actually seen and experienced. It is recommended in the Shastra that after retiring from active life and accepting the Vanaprastha order, one should travel everywhere to places of pilgrimage to purify himself. Vidura completely discharged this duty, and at last he reached Kusavrata, or Hardwar, where he met the sage Maitreya. So we see here an example of how Vidura became purified simply by visiting holy places. But Prabhupada gives some concessions in this particular purport and makes it sound quite easy. But actually, if one can go into a holy place, obviously there is great spiritual benefit. But one should not try to see the holy places with one's material eyes. There's one story where one German man, he was studying about spiritual life in India, and he heard that Vrindavan was one of the most holy places. So after a sufficient amount of study, he decided to take a trip to Vrindavan. And he boarded a plane and took a trip. Finally, he arrived in Delhi. And from Delhi, he took a car to Mathura. And when he got to Mathura, he was seeing so much, confusion, rickshaws and people everywhere, and dogs and uncleanliness. And he was thinking, his mind was becoming doubtful. So he decided to take a rickshaw from Mathura to Vrindavan, and which is what you normally do. And as he was going, he was seeing all the sights of the atmosphere, which was not so pleasant. So he was thinking, this is a holy place. This is the most sacred of all places. So at one point he turned around and went back. Never actually entered in Vrindavan. Became somewhat overwhelmed by seeing. He had no understanding of the Dham. So you cannot see the Dham with your eyes. There is a covering of material energy over the Dham, which protects the Dham from unscrupulous persons who have no appreciation from the Dham. They can't see the Dham, nor can they experience the Dham. And therefore, what they see is simply just ordinary, things. But the Dham is Krishna's transcendental abode, especially Vrindavan Dham. It says that simply by rolling in the dust of Vrindavan Dham sufficiently, one can actually attain to the love of God. The dust of Vrindavan is so sacred that you can actually it's Chintamani. It's, in other words, it's transcendental, it's pure. And the dust of Vrindavan, one can eat the dust of Vrindavan. It's so pure. And it says that the animals who live in the Dham, such as the pigs and the dogs who lie in the dust, they're eating that dust every day, and then in their next life, they again take birth in the Dham as a human being, or they may even go back to Godhead. The Dham is so, the dust of Vrindavan is so pure. Why? Because Krishna's lotus feet have touched that dust. And anything that Krishna's lotus feet touches directly is of the absolute nature of Krishna. So that dust is very sacred. Sometimes we go, you know, we go to Vrindavan and we get dirty. And we think, oh, we're dirty. But actually, that dirt is Chintamani. There's one story where one, you know, the, in Vrindavan and in many holy places, you find people who are not really practicing spiritual life properly. And so they are known as sahajyas. Those sahajya means one who takes things cheaply, or one who doesn't know the value of something. So one man came into the Krishna Balaram temple, and he was rolling on the floor, exhibiting so many symptoms of ecstasy. And devotees had heard from Prabhupada that, you know, when you see people like that, you know, you should understand that they're all cheating. So they went to Prabhupada and they told him about this man. Prabhupada said, carefully pick him up and take him outside. So they did and put him outside. And he was laying in the dust of Vrindavan. So he got up, he brushed the dust of Vrindavan off his clothes, he lit up a cigarette, and then he left. So he really didn't appreciate or didn't have the value of the Vrindavan dust, nor of what is real spirituality. So the holy places are Krishna non-different. Actually, the holy places are expansions of Lord Balaram. This is interesting because Balaram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he serves his older brother Krishna by providing spiritual paraphernalia for Krishna. So all the spiritual planets in the spiritual world are all expansions of Balaram. Krishna's abode in the spiritual world is none different than Balaram. In other words, Balaram is always serving, although he's the Lord, he's always serving Krishna in different ways. So he expands himself, just like the paraphernalia that we worship the deity with, the arti paraphernalia, that's Balaram. The bed of the deity, that's Balaram. The shoes of the deity, that's Balaram. Balaram is the paraphernalia of the Lord. He's also the abode of the Lord. So the transcendental abode of the Lord is actually an expansion of Lord Balaram. Therefore, that is the absolute nature. Because he provides that service for Krishna. He serves his older brother in that mood of assisting him in his transcendental pastimes like that. By becoming the abode, by becoming the planets, by actually everything spiritual is Balaram. It's an energy of Balaram. And Krishna uses that energy. It's non-different than Krishna, we say, but also Krishna and Balaram are also non-different. So within the spiritual definition, there is divisions of categories, but ultimately the principle is the absolute principle. Everything is spiritual, but when we study it deeper, we find there's different aspects to the absolute nature. So everything that Krishna uses for his past, the flute is also Balaram. Just like when Krishna wanted to come in his pastime as Lord Chaitanya, he said to the flute, flute, you can't come with me on this leela, because I'm going to be in a different form and I don't really need your assistance. So the flute became upset being separated from Krishna. So the flute incarnated as the mridanga. So the mridanga is Balaram. It's an incarnation of the flute. That's why you're very good here. You put the mridanga put it on the ground, it's not proper. Some temples we have mridanga racks where the dumb mridanga, because it's actually Balaram. I remember one time, devotees did that pastime of jagai and mudai. No, I'm sorry, the pastime of the Chankasi. When the devotees were chanting, the Chankasi became angry and came in and chastised the devotees. And in order to show his anger even more, he picked up their mridanga and smashed it. So devotees performed that pastime. And they had a broken mridanga. And they performed that pastime with a broken mridanga. And they smashed it on the ground. Prabhupada saw that. Wow, boy, did he get angry. Whoa, he was... They tried to explain, Prabhupada's already broken. He didn't want to hear it. It didn't matter. But still, you don't do that, even with a broken mridanga. And mridanga is Balaram. It's non-different. So this is how the Balaram expands himself into different aspects. And he is the transcendental Dham. Yeah. Like that. So I'll read some more. Let's see. O my friend, please therefore chant the glories of the Lord, who is meant to be glorified in places of pilgrimage. He is unborn, yet he appears by his causeless mercy upon the surrendered rulers of all parts of the universe. Only for their interest did he appear in the family of his unalloyed devotees, the Yadus. Prabhupada writes, the purpose of pilgrimages is to remember the Lord constantly. Therefore, the Lord is known as Tirthakirti. The purpose of going to a place of pilgrimage is to get a chance to glorify the Lord. Even today, although times have changed, there are still pilgrimage sites in India. For example, in Mathura and Vrindavan, where we had a chance to stay, people are awake from early in the morning at 4 a.m. up to nighttime. And they are constantly engaged in some way or other in chanting the holy glories of the Lord. The beauty of such a pilgrimage site is that automatically one remembers the glories of the Lord. His name, fame, quality, form, pastimes, and entourage are all identical with the Lord. And therefore, chanting the glories of the Lord invokes the personal presence of the Lord. Anytime or anywhere pure devotees meet and chant the glories of the Lord, the Lord is present without a doubt. It is said that this is said by the Lord himself that he always stays where his pure devotees chant his glories. So Prabhupada takes that principle of holy places and extends it that wherever the Lord chants his glories, that's also a holy place. So we can apply that principle that all our temples are also holy places. So again, this principle of residing in a holy place can be extended to the temple of the Lord. And that also becomes a holy place. And so that principle applies there. Because we can't all live, we can't all leave everything and go to Mathura and Vrindavan and take up residence. And some of us are not ready. Because, again, if we go to holy places, we have to have some sukriti. Sometimes people go to holy places just for sightseeing. And people go to holy places just for shopping. Or people go to holy places in order to get married. Prabhupada talks about one pastime. He says, in many holy places in India, young ladies who are looking for husbands, they go to holy places to meet a nice sadhu, so they can get a nice husband. So they go there to meet some nice sadhu. But the sadhus, they know this. So, I mean, and people in general know this. So people dress up as sadhus and go to holy places and meet nice girls. So nobody's satisfied. So it becomes a cheating program. So one should not go to holy places to find your husband or wife. If it happens, then that's all right. But that's not the purpose of going to holy places. Coming to holy places is to serve the holy place. We serve the Lord in different ways. We also serve the Dham. And service in the Dham is much more powerful than service outside of the Dham. For example, in Vrindavan, any service you perform in Vrindavan counts twice as much in spiritual potency does it dwell anywhere else. And if you go to Vrindavan in Kartik, that time of year, it's multiplied hundreds of times. So whatever benefit you get, other places, it's multiplied in the holy places. But particularly in Vrindavan, the offenses also. If one commits offenses in the Dham, then the effects of the offenses are also stronger than they are outside of the Dham. But there's one Dham that is very, very special, and that is Sri Dham Mayapur. Sri Dham Mayapur, because one, there is a special feature in Sri Dham Mayapur which is called Adarya. Adarya means mercy. Sri Dham Mayapur and Vrindavan is non-different. There is no difference between Mayapur and Vrindavan. But the question is that in Mayapur, one can get special mercy of Lord Chaitanya and at the same time not get the same reaction for offenses. So I'll read something. This is from Navadvip Mahatmya by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Lord Jiva Goswami, he came to Navadvip. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Jiva Goswami, you go to Vrindavan. Before he went to Vrindavan, he went to Navadvip to get the blessings of Lord Nityananda. So then he's asking Lord Nityananda some questions. He takes shelter of Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda asks, Jiva Goswami asks, He says he's talking about Lord Chaitanya's instruction to him. He says, the Lord's order is supreme. Accepting that, I must indeed go to Vrindavan. But I have a few questions to ask. O Lord, for the benefit of your servant, please answer. You say that Navadvip and Vrindavan are done different. If that is so, why should one make the effort to go to Vrindavan at all? So, after hearing Jiva Goswami's question, Nityananda Prabhu answered, this is a deep topic, so listen carefully. But as long as the Lord's pastimes are manifest, see that the materialists do not know of this. But as long as the Lord's pastimes are manifest, see that the materialists do not know of this. In other words, the answer he's giving. This is Lord Nityananda's answer. Navadvip and Vrindavan are one principle. One is neither less nor greater than the other. Vrindavan is the receptacle of Ras and the goal of the living entities. But one who is not qualified cannot receive that nectar. Therefore, that same Dham has mercifully become Navadvip, where the living entities can attain qualification for that nectar. So one gets the qualification in Navadvip to enter into Vrindavan. In other words, Radha and Krishna's pastimes are the highest of all transcendental metals. Therefore, one has no immediate right to them. After many lifetimes of austerities, one reaches the stage of knowledge. When that knowledge matures, one inquires about Ras. But there are also many obstacles. So to obtain the great treasure of this nectar is very rare indeed. Therefore, anyone and everyone who goes to Vrindavan does not get that Ras. Rather, because of offenses, the sweet nectar turns sour. So it's not easy to go to Vrindavan. We can go physically, but that's not the Dham. One has to go in the heart. One other has to travel in the consciousness, a proper consciousness. And I'll explain the relationship between Dham and consciousness. In this terrible age of Kali, offenses are continuous. The body is short-lived and there are many troubles. So even if one wants the Vrindavan Ras, it is not attainable. Therefore, the only method of getting that Ras is by the mercy of Krishna. Radha and Krishna have given that mercy to the living entities by manifesting Vrindavan in the form of Navadvip. and by incarnating in the womb of Sachi, he formed Sri Gaur Hari. In that form, they have given the process to qualify for Rajaras. Even the initial presence of offenses do not bar one from quickly attaining the goal of prema. If one lives in Navadvipa and takes shelter of the holy name, his offenses will be destroyed and the qualification for ras will appear. Love of Krishna will soon shine within his heart, and topics of Radha and Krishna will prevail. In this way, by achieving Gauranga's mercy, the living entity attains Vrindavan, the holy abode of Radha and Krishna, and their nectaring pastimes. So that was Lord Nityananda's answer. So in order to qualify one, for one to go to Vrindavan, one has to take shelter of Sri Navadvip Dham, chant the holy names, and receive the mercy of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And by that qualification, we can actually see the holy Dham of Vrindavan within Navadvip. Just like those who have, how many of you have been to Navadvip Dham? Many? More than half. Good. In Navadvip Dham, there's Govardhan Hill. You've been? There's a place called Govardhan Hill. There is Radhakund. There is Shyamakund. And there are many other replicas of other Vrindavan holy places in Navadvip. Just because the show that the Lord's Dham is absolute. So in this age, no one can approach either Radha Krishna directly or their Dham. One has to go through the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's no other way in this age. Sometimes people criticize Prabhupada, other spiritualists, and even other Vaishnavas. They say that Srila Prabhupada hasn't given the highest. He hasn't. He's kept a lot back because we don't really understand the higher pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan. But that's incorrect. The thing is, you can't approach Radha and Krishna directly in this age. Although they're there in their deity form, they manifest themselves, they reveal themselves only through the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How do you get Mahaprabhu's mercy? Two things. One, two, chant the holy names, and don't offend Vaishnavas. That's the only way. If you're free from offenses to Vaishnavas and you chant the holy names, you can get Lord Chaitanya's mercy. That's the qualification. Offending Vaishnavas block the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. He's very strong on this point, that one cannot get his mercy if they're offending other Vaishnavas. So we have to be free from those offenses and chant the holy names. In fact, that's the only way one can really chant the holy names. So, Lord Nityananda continues. He's saying to Jiva, this topic is very confidential, so don't discuss it openly. Actually, there is absolutely no difference between Navadvip and Vrindavan. Now you are qualified to take shelter of the place where Radha and Krishna's ras is fully manifest, so you should go to Vrindavan. In a strict sense, there is no need to go to Vrindavan upon attaining qualifications that Raja Dham appears here in Navadvip. Still, you should go to Raj, for that is the order of the Lord. For living entities, it is always proper to first take shelter of Navadvip to obtain the qualification for relishing the ras of Vrindavan. Then one may live in Vrindavan, the place for actually acquiring that ras, and there he may enjoy those transcendental mellows. When you get the mercy of Navadvip, you will easily attain Vrindavan. So Jiva Goswami is overwhelmed with ecstasy. He grabs the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda and says, I have another question. There's another question. He says, many people live in Navadvip, but they are still unable to attain Krishna Bhakti. As they are staying in this dham, how do offenses remain in them? This has been very disturbing to me. O Lord, you are the abode of the universe, yet you remain eternally free from material contamination. Please tell me how the devotees will be free from this doubt. So then he goes on to say, so Lord Nityananda answers, listen, Jiva, both Vrindavan and Navadvipa are the shelter of countless blissful devotees. Purified living entities who have crossed over the material nature live here as Krishna's associate. This dham is eternally pure spiritual abode, where material nature and time are conquered. In this abode, the land and time are eternally full of bliss and completely opposite to the material world. You should know that the houses, the doors, the rivers, the streams, the forests, the courtyards are all completely spiritual and intensely attractive. That blissful place, transcendental to material nature, rests on Krishna's inconceivable and supremely magnanimous Sadanish energy, Sandini energy. By that energy, the Dham has descended here in Nadia, for Krishna's real desire is to deliver all living entities. Materialistic persons cannot enter the Dham, nor is there any material influence here. Maya has eternally covered the Dham with a film of dull matter. Persons who have no relationship with Krishna Chaitanya simply live on the top of that covering. It's interesting. So they can't enter into the Dham, they're on the surface. Although they appear to be in the Dham, they're not in the Dham. Because the Dham is not material. And anyone who sees the Dham material means that they are basically an atheist. They have no faith. Therefore, one cannot see the Dham with one's eyes. One has to see through the eyes of devotion. Oh. Though one is thinking, I am in Navadvip, Protomaya happily keeps that person far away from the Dham. Protomaya, she's the energy that protects the Dham. But if by some great fortune one receives the association of a pure devotee, that relationship of Sambandha will be established with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then he goes on to explain. So he gets, Lord Nityananda gets pretty heavy here. He says, this topic of Sambandha is a deep thing, O son of Balava, a treasure that the conditioned souls cannot easily understand. Even if one calls out the name Sri Krishna Chaitanya with seemingly affection, if that relation is not established in one heart, he simply remains in the material realm. Some such a person resides on the top of the Dham's illusionary cover and never attains pure bhakti. That person is a Dharma Dwaji, or hypocritically devout, who is especially duplicitous, who has no humility and is full of pride, yet he still thinks he is fully qualified. By the devotee's mercy, even such a person can give up his pride and perform devotional service. One should think himself lower than the grass, more tolerant than the tree, should not desire respect for himself, but should expertly offer respects to others. When one possesses these four qualities and sings the glories of Lord Krishna, his relationship with Sri Chaitanya manifests within his heart. So that's the key. That verse from Chaitanya Shikshastika is to develop humility, not only humility, humility as like a grass. How humble is the grass? You step on it, right? Animals, they do their business on it. You're out here, you were all pitching our tents. We stick the grass with our, right? Throw prasadam on it. So many things. Well, that's okay, but the grass doesn't complain. But there's a statement, it says, more humble than the grass. Now, the actual statement is not grass, but straw. Because grass, when you step on it, after a while it comes up again. But straw lays flat. doesn't come up. So Lord Chaitanya says you have to be more humble than that. Then you can chant the holy name. So, I mean, it's possible with the mercy of the Lord and with the determination of a Vaishnava. More tolerant than the tree? Tree, how tolerant a tree is? Stands, sun is so hot, standing in the hot sun. But yet it gives shade to everyone. The woodcutter comes along. He's working hard. He's tired. He lays under the tree, gets some rest, feels refreshed, sees that there's fruits in the tree, takes some fruits to eat, and then he cuts the tree down. So Prabhupada said, Lord Chaitanya says, how tolerant? More tolerant than the tree. Get ready to give all respects to others and not expecting any respect for oneself. That is the consciousness that one can enter into the Dham, or the consciousness for chanting the holy name. So that doesn't come automatically. It comes by a constant cultivation of that mood of devotion and practicing the process correctly. We have to practice these qualities. The Dham is not simply a place. The spiritual master is also the manifest, or the pure devotee, we should say. The pure devotee, spiritual master, is a manifestation of the Dham. Srila Prabhupada was living in Vrindavan. Before he came to the West, he was writing in Vrindavan, preparing his books, the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, volumes 1, 2, and 3. He stayed in Vrindavan for about 5 years. His rooms are still there, the Radha Damodar temple. You can go and see the little room Prabhupada lived in. Now it's fixed up. There's been some renovation, but before it was just a mud floor, you know, and one little straw mat where Prabhupada used to sleep on. He had some places where he would keep his personal belongings. That's all it was. It was one light hanging down with a bulb, and most of the time it didn't work. And then there was no running water. He would have to go to the Jamuna River to get water. So that was Prabhupada's life in Vrindavan. So he stayed there for 5 years. But then he left and came to the West. But he brought Vrindavan with him. So he was bringing us Vrindavan simply by his presence. So there's a statement that actually the pure devotee is actually a tirtha. There's a beautiful glorification. Let me see if I can find it here. I think I have it here. This is spoken by Vidura. Yes, he's speaking to Maitreya. My Lord, devotees like your good self are verily holy places personified. Because you carry the personality of Godhead within your heart, you turn all places into places of pilgrimage. So the holy Dham sometimes becomes what we say overburdened with sin. When sinful people come to the holy Dham and they perform penance, and they leave their sinful reactions there. And the holy men who live there are meant to absorb that sinful reaction to keep the Dham pure, like that. So the holy persons, they go to the Dhams, they reside there, and they also purify the Dhams by their presence, because they're a walking Dham in themselves. So when sinful people come to the Dham, they leave their sinful activities there. You should also know that in your temples, and when guests come, if the devotees are not strong, when guests come in our temples, they leave their sinful reactions in the temple. Not all of them, some of them. But the devotees, if they're not spiritually strong, they become affected by materialistic persons coming there. So we have to be somewhat strong and to absorb those sinful activities and somehow not be affected. So I think Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj has done something very revolutionary in the history of ISKCON. He has made all of Prabhupada's, what we say, places, temples, and he has shown by his example that they're all as non-different than any other holy place. When he was in his last days, the devotees were encouraging him to go to Vrindavan, go to Navadvipa. He said, no, I'm going to stay here in Gita Nagari because Srila Prabhupada has placed his holy feet on this land, as he established this place. Therefore, it is a holy place. Therefore, if I leave here, it is like leaving, as good as leaving in any other holy place. And that's a fact. That's a fact. Well, one has to have that realization, not simply theoretical. But he had that realization that these places are none different than the holy places of pilgrimage. Okay. So why do we go to holy dhams? We go to holy dhams to serve the dham. That's why we go. To offer devotional service to the dham. There are nine processes of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Archanam, Vandanam, Parasevanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. And one of the processes, Parasevanam. Parasevanam means serving the lotus feet. So when you visit the holy places of pilgrimage, you are performing Parasevanam. You should know that. And sometimes we wonder how to perform all the nine processes. But Parasevanam includes holding festivals and going to holy places of pilgrimage. So regularly, Srila Prabhupada wanted devotees to visit Sridham Mayapur. He said every year, every devotee in our society should go to Mayapur. You know, specifically for Lord Chaitanya's appearance day. And to get the mercy of the Dham, to serve the Dham, to associate with the devotees in the Dham, and then to take the mercy of the Dham back with us in our day-to-day service, and then that way we can become somewhat, not only become strong, but also be able to give that mercy to others. Prabhupada wanted that. So one may not be able to go, everyone may be able to go at the same time. That's not practical. If we did that, all our temples would be empty. So, but everyone should go to holy places at least once a year. Whether, for a week or two, go to a place of pilgrimage. Go to Vrindavan, Jagannath Puri, Navadvipa, of course, is recommended high on the list. Or are there any other holy places of pilgrimage? And see the difference in your spiritual life. If we go with the right mood, we'll develop the right consciousness. And then when you go to the holy places, you chant, don't speak nonsense. The worst thing you can do in a holy place is speak nonsense or gossip. Prabhupada became very upset when a lot of devotees were moving to Vrindavan and simply taking up materialistic activities. He said, this is not Vrindavan. The Dham is for those who simply want to serve the Dham and not to engage and not to set up some materialistic arrangement in the Dham. So the Dhams are very important. So we should do that. We should make pilgrimage. His Holiness Radhanath Swami has two or three yatras a year where he takes his devotees every year to some holy place. And Srila Prabhupada writes, this is an interesting statement, this might get me in trouble, but I'll say it anyway, because I like to say things that get me in trouble. Prabhupada writes, it's Prabhupada's words, that every devotee in this Krishna consciousness movement should visit all the holy places of pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Not some, but all of them. He said we should all visit all of Lord Chaitanya's pastime places. I mean, there's a lot. So, in other words, one should, every once in a while, take a pilgrimage and visit some holy place. It's very, very essential. We have our mother Lilo, now she's Tirthakirti. I gave her that name yesterday. Tirthakirti means It's a name for Krishna, who means that one who is glorified in the sacred holy places, because she likes holy places. She's always going to holy places. She was in, what was that place you were in? Gadagiri, where one deity. Prabhupada speaks a little bit about these holy places. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam. The city and district of Mathura are very intimately connected with Krishna, for Lord Krishna lives there eternally. You know, it says that anyone who was born in Mathura, that birth cannot be compared to any birth anywhere in the universe. Mathura is, it's the place where Krishna took his birth. It is understood that Mathura city is the transcendental abode of Lord Krishna. It is not an ordinary material city, for it is eternally connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vrindavan is within the jurisdiction of Mathura and it still continues to exist, because Mathura and Vrindavan are intimately connected with Krishna eternally. And it says that Lord Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. How is it that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan? He leaves Vrindavan, we see, in his pastimes, many times, not many, when Akrura came on behalf of Kamsa to take Krishna out of Vrindavan, he left. He went out to Mathura. He went to Mathura to take care of some political affairs, and then he left Mathura and went traveling. So Krishna did leave Vrindavan. So how is that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan? Never. How is he existing? When Krishna was born, when he was born in the jail cell, when he took birth, we all know the story from the 10th canto, how Krishna was born from Devaki and Vasudeva. And Kamsa, that rascal Kamsa, he wanted to kill Krishna. Of course, no one can kill Krishna. But he had killed the 6 sons of Devaki before that. Somehow or other, the 7th son was Balaram. And due to the arrangement of the Lord, Balaram was transferred from the room of Devaki to the womb of Mohini to protect him from Kamsa. But the 8th child was supposed to be Krishna. And Krishna took birth. But in order to protect him, Vasudev took Krishna out of the jail cell by the arrangement of the Lord. We know the pastime. Now one night after Devaki gave birth, actually Krishna appeared to her in his former form. And Devaki and Vasudev worshipped Krishna but he was known as Vaikuntha Krishna, in the sense that he had 4 arms and he was dressed in royal paraphernalia. He was in the mood of a prince. He was Krishna of Dwarka. But still, he was Krishna. So Vasudev, by the mystic power of Yoga Maya, somehow or other, all the guards fell asleep, all the jail cells opened. He took Krishna, crossed the Jamuna River, went to Vrindavan, and Mother Yasoda, she had given birth 2 children. But because when she gave birth, she was unconscious. She didn't know who or what she gave birth to. And therefore, she only thought she gave birth to 1 child, a girl. But actually, she gave birth to twins, Krishna and Yogamaya or Subhadra. And so what Vasudev did, he took the girl, Yogamaya, and he left Vaikuntha Krishna there. Now, Vrindavan Krishna, who had already taken birth from Mother Yasoda, was also there. But the 2 Krishnas came together. They merged. So Vrindavan Krishna and Mathura Krishna became 1 Krishna. And then he took the girl back, and then when Kamsa realized there was a girl, that was that's a whole other story. So Krishna was in Vrindavan. He grew up like that. So when Akrura came to take Krishna out of Vrindavan, when he got to the border of Vrindavan, the two Krishnas again separated. But no one could see that. And he took the Vaikuntha Krishna out of Vrindavan, and the Vrindavan Krishna remained in his bhava expansion of devotion. This is a very deep, deep pastime, but it's really interesting because Krishna never left Vrindavan. He stayed in his form as Vrindavan Krishna, but no one could see it. Therefore, what were they experiencing? Krishna's presence, his presence of separation, or the ecstasy of bhava. Loving Krishna in the mood of separation. Although he was gone, he still was not gone. So this is how Krishna never left Vrindavan. It's an interesting story. Okay. At present, the place known as Vrindavan in District Mathura continues its position as a transcendental place. And certainly anyone who goes there becomes transcendentally purified. Navadvip Dham is also intimately connected with Braj Bhumi. Narottam Das Thakur says, Shri Gaura Mandala Bhumi Ye Jana Chintamani Tarahoi Braj Bhumi Vas. Braj Bhumi refers to Mathura Vrindavan, and Gaura Mandala Bhumi includes Sri Navadvip Dham. These two places are non-different. Therefore, anyone living in Navadvip Dham, knowing Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be the same person who lives in Braj Bhumi, Mathura Vrindavan. The Lord has made it convenient for the conditioned souls to live in Mathura Vrindavan Navadvip and thus be connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada goes on to explain some basic principles. So, the Dham is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Dham manifests itself to the vision of the devotee through their pure devotion. The Dham exists as a tract of land but cannot be measured. One cannot measure the Dham. One who tries to measure the Dham, that is also considered offense. Just like we say, what is the size of Vrindavan? It's a 32-mile tract of land. But is it actually that? No. It's actually Krishna's abode in the spiritual world. What's the difference between the Krishna's abode in the spiritual world and Krishna's abode in the material world? What's the difference between Goloka and Gokula? Goloka is the spiritual Dham. That's one in the spiritual world. Gokula is in the material world. What's the difference? The difference is that in the spiritual world, Krishna's pastimes are constantly manifested. And in the spiritual world, in the material world, those pastimes are manifested or unmanifested. Sometimes manifested and sometimes unmanifested. But those who have the vision can see Krishna's pastimes all the time. Even in Gokula Vrindavan. That's the difference. Otherwise, it's the same. Okay. Any questions? Mataji? Yeah, they're not really in Vrindavan. You can't actually go back to the spiritual world unless you're in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a state of consciousness, although the abode of Vrindavan in terms of the physical place provides a certain atmosphere. If one cannot enter into that atmosphere, they're not in the abode. They get some benefit. It says, just like the hogs and dogs, if they simply eat the dust of Vrindavan, then the next life they go back to Godhead. So one who lives in Vrindavan, if they get somehow or other the mercy of a Dambasi, or one who's a pure devotee living in the Dham, then they can somehow or other get the mercy of the Dham. I know two incidents. I know one devotee, he was in Chicago. He got sick. He wanted to go to Vrindavan to die. So he went to Vrindavan, stayed there, but somehow or other, due to some arrangement, he was forced to leave there. He tried to get back, but while he was trying to go back, he left his body. You can't die in Vrindavan unless Krishna wants you. Even though you can plan to go there and die, you can't. There was one Dambasi who was born in the Vrindavan Dham, but he was cheating. He was cheating the devotees. And he was doing all kinds of racketeering. Although he was a resident born in Vrindavan, somehow or other there was a fight. He got shot. And they took him to the hospital in Vrindavan. They couldn't treat him there. They took him outside of Vrindavan. He died in Delhi. You can't die in Vrindavan unless Krishna wants you. Unless you get that mercy. It's not easy. But if one takes shelter of the pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, and has the adhikari, that means the qualification of devotion, then one can die in Vrindavan and attain. It's a special mercy to die in Vrindavan, just like Navadvipa Dham. Special mercy. Yes, Prabhu. Some people, when they go to Vrindavan and Mayapur, they prefer Vrindavan. That's nice, but in order to enter into Vrindavan, you have to more or less get the mercy of Navadvipa. We read that story of Jiva Goswami. And Lord Nityananda said this is a very confidential topic. You can go to Vrindavan, but that doesn't mean you're in Vrindavan. I know, you know, it is a whole list of Lord Chaitanya's associates who never went to Vrindavan. They never went to Vrindavan. It's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It says, these devotees never went to Vrindavan Dham. But they were Lord Chaitanya's personal, pure associates. So the question is, you know, it's not a matter of going there. It's a matter of having the proper consciousness. If you go there and develop the consciousness, then that qualifies you. But the thing about Vrindavan, and I'll tell you personally, I don't spend more than 1 or 2 days in Vrindavan at a time, or a few days, because it's easy to commit offenses there. Really easy. And the offenses you commit in Vrindavan are severe. You know, very severe. One can disqualify themselves. Spiritual life is a double-edged sword. The mercy is there, but if we don't take advantage of the mercy and commit offenses, we get the opposite. It's like associating with so many devotees. It's the greatest form of spiritual enthusiasm and upliftment, but if we're in the association of devotees, if we're committing offenses, we're going to go the other way. So we have to be very careful in associating with devotees, just like we have to be very careful associating with the Dham. So that's the point. Let's see, I got a whole bunch of hands here. Who's first? You're most eager, so I'll have to choose. There is 10 offenses to the Dham. There's a list of offenses to the Holy Dham. So one has to be careful not to commit those. But the most severe of all offenses is offenses to a Vaishnava. So when you go to the Holy Dham, you might meet so many unusual people. And somehow or other, if you take issue with them, then you could also, you know, go the other way. You may not understand. It's hard, very hard to understand pure devotees who live in the Dham. They may be quite eccentric or even do things the opposite way. Just like, I'll give you an example. Ramanujacharya. Now, who was Ramanujacharya? He was an energy of Lakshman. He incarnated in order to defeat Mayavadi philosophy and establish the principles of a worship of the Lord in opulence as the personality of Godhead. And he was a great and humble devotee. And one of the things, or one of the services he used to do, is he used to establish standards of deity worship. So he would go to different places and upgrade the standards of deity worship. So one time he came to Jagannath Puri, the abode of Lord Jagannath, and he saw the pandas, how they were worshipping Jagannath. I was just in Puri. Have you ever seen how the pandas worship Jagannath? They treat him like an ordinary person. But actually, not in their heart they do, but externally they do. You know, it seems like they're not treating him properly, or they do certain things, you know, that are just like outside the standard of deity worship. But they're Jagannath's personal, intimate associates. You can't see that by their behavior many times. So Ramanujacharya took issue with the deity worship in Puri. And he tried to make corrections to upgrade the standard. And this went on for a little while, and then one night he had a dream. And in the dream, Jagannath appeared to him. He said, you're establishing your deity standards, but don't do it here. Not with my devotees. And he threw Ramanujacharya 1,000 miles. And when he woke up the next morning, he was no longer in Jagannath Puri, he was in Kurukshetra, which is a long way away. It's like about 1,000 kilometers, not 1,000 miles. Yeah. So Jagannath didn't like that. He was trying to rearrange, because the pandas worship Jagannath in spontaneous love. And many of the residents of holy places have a spontaneous attraction for the deity. Look at Vamsi Das. His appearance day is coming up in a few days, Vamsi Das. He used to carry a set of deities of Gaur Nittai, and he would bathe them in the river. He would dunk them in the river like this. And that's how he would bathe them. And then he would go out begging, and he would give them something to eat. But sometimes he'd come back with nothing. He would tell them, I'm sorry, you can't eat today, my lord. I didn't get anything. And sometimes he would chastise them. He would chastise his deities. Now you try that. See what happens. You know? So if you see, you know, someone like that, you know, you might take issue with a person like that, but you don't know where they're at. When you go to the Dham, there's so many persons whose behavior may be not in line with what we think is the standard of proper behavior. So therefore, you have to be very, very careful in the Dham and not criticize anyone. There was another story where this was in ISKCON, back in the early days. Devotees had gone to the Dham. And you know how the residents of different places, they try to make some money on you. They try to take the prices up. So one resident of the Dham was doing that to one devotee. He was trying to cheat him. So the devotee got a little angry, and there was a discussion and became an argument. And the devotee pushed. Didn't hit him, just pushed him. So the word got back to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, send that boy back to his country immediately. He didn't want to hear what was the issue. He said, send him back immediately. Because you know, you can't do that to residents of the Dham. Even if they abuse you, you have to accept it as mercy. I mean, we were in Jagannath Puri. We got abused during the Rath Yatra. And it was like nectar. We were really getting abused by the police. They were really harassing us. And Radhanath Swami said, he said, this is nectar because without getting abused, this whole pilgrimage is not incomplete. It's part of going to the Dham, getting a little abuse. It makes the whole thing exciting. So this is what it means. When you enter into the Dham, you may not understand things. You may try to be cheated by the local people. And if you react or become offensive, then you get the reaction. So that's what it means. Yes, Mataji.
What about the slaughterhouse?
Oh. What about it? There's a few places in India like that. Obviously, it's not in the Dham. It's in an area which you consider to be the geography of the Dham, but it's not the Dham. One cannot commit sinful activity in the Dham. It's like if you go to Vrindavan, it says that you know the mafia is very strong in Vrindavan. A lot of corruption. But there's one statement, I forgot what Purana it's in. It says, in the age of Kali, all the holy dhams, except Sri Dham Mayapur, develop more and more coverings of material energy over them because of the effects of Kali. Except Mayapur. Mayapur, as the Kali Yuga goes on, becomes more and more self-apparent. In other words, becomes more transcendental. Mayapur somehow or other goes up, where the other dhams, they don't go down, but the energy of the material energy covers them more. And to enter into the other dhams becomes harder and harder in Kali Yuga. But if you go to Mayapur, you'll get the supreme mercy, yes. Rectify the... One has to chant the holy names of the Lord. It's Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, any offenses to the Dham, one has to just absorb themselves in chanting the holy names. The only offense that you cannot become free from is the offense of a Vaishnava. And that you have to go to the Vaishnava and beg forgiveness sincerely, not just, you know, officially, but sincerely beg forgiveness and ask for some service. But if we commit offense, the thing is to stop committing the offense and to absorb himself and sufficient chanting of the holy names will absolve the offenses. That's true with all the offenses except Vaishnava Aparana. That's the only one you can't get free from by chanting. In fact, I'll give you a statement from the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Lord Chaitanya is speaking this himself. He says, anyone who commits offenses to my devotees and chants the holy names at the same time, the holy name destroys that person. It kicks him out of devotional service because you can't use the holy name to counteract Vaishnava Aparada. In fact, the holy name is Krishna, and the one who's offending Krishna's devotees, and the holy name acts as a tool to kick that person out of the association of devotees. So that's how the holy name works. So we have to be very, very careful in association with devotees. Devotees are special. All devotees are special. Even the brand new neophyte devotee. Every devotee is special. Okay. Mother Shasha, she had a question, but she left, huh? Okay. Yes. Yeah, Vrindavan is just like sometimes we say entering into Vrindavan means emptying into the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So just like you can read the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, but it doesn't mean you can understand them. So when you have the proper consciousness or the proper, what we say, mood of devotion, then gradually you can enter into that understanding. Same way with the Dham. You can go to the Dham and develop the consciousness. But the thing is, one has to have the proper mood when they go to the Dham. That means one has to render humble devotional service to the residents of the Dham. Don't go to the Dham simply to try to, you know, just go there or buy nice things or sightsee or just experience the unusual nature of the Dham. One has to go there with a desire to serve. Like that. And then gradually one's consciousness will be purified. Yes. Question over here somewhere? Yeah, there's always benefits. As long as you're not offensive, there's always benefits. No matter what you go there for, there's always benefits. But, you know, it's like you're right in front of you is a million euros. But if you're in the wrong consciousness, you can only get 100 euros. When your consciousness is right, you'll get more and more from that experience. So if anyone who goes there for blessings or simply to visit the holy places, they'll get benefit, undoubtedly, good benefit. You pay your obeisances there. If you take darshan of the holy tirthas in the Dham, if you take the prasadam, it's all tremendous benefit. Tremendous amount of benefit. But generally, we don't want to stay too long. Because if we stay too long, then after a while we start seeing the Dham as ordinary. Therefore, if you're going to stay there for a period of time, better to take up full-time devotional service. And then gradually you'll be able to purify yourself. Okay. Yes, way in the back. I can barely see you, but I know you're there. Missed the part of your question about the offenses, about the devotees who they go to the Vrindavan. Someone who's criticizing? I'm trying to understand the nature of your question. Yeah, come a little closer. We're vegetarians, so. Thank you. Oh, when we say things about them. That's not offensive. We should be careful that we're not feeling better than them, because if they're somehow in that situation, we shouldn't think, well, I'm better. If you think you're better, that's somewhat of, it's kind of a sense of pride. If you're, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, it's not possible to speak and not speak about someone else. We're always speaking about somebody else. But the question is, what is the mood of our speech? What is the tone of our speech? That if someone's in a lesser condition, be merciful. You know, if someone has been offensive, then, you know, you may mention that, but, you know, you should feel sorry for them. You know, not that you feel better because you're not offensive and they are. Devotee feels unhappy when others are unhappy, and they feel happy when others are happy. That's Krishna conscious. So if you're speaking about devotees who left, you should speak about maybe one of the ways you can help them come back. what can you do to encourage them to come back again? But we shouldn't be envious, we shouldn't be angry, we shouldn't find fault. Because if we do, then Krishna will show us that we're no better. As soon as we start criticizing someone else, Krishna puts us in this situation to show you, you think you're so good? Now look at you. He makes you wake up to your own situation. Because everything depends on his mercy. If he decides to remove his mercy, we're finished. We can't do anything. We're lost. You know? So we should be thankful for the mercy. We should be grateful for the mercy. We should try to distribute the mercy, but we should understand that we are a mercy case. And somehow or other, others have been unfortunate and they weren't able to take the mercy. Okay? Thank you. Yes, Prabhu? Hmm. Four. Wait a minute. No, he was born with two. Yeah, you're right. He was born with two, but he manifested four. Yeah, you're right. Yes. Yeah, he was born with two arms, but then he revealed himself to his mother in his forearm form. And then when she saw that, she realized her son was the Supreme Personality. Then she told him, you better hide and get rid of that form. So he again came down to two arms. But he was Vaikuntha Krishna. He wasn't Vrindavan Krishna. I'll read something from Bhakti Siddhanta. Why do people visit holy places? Answer, the places where the Lord and his devotees perform pastimes are called tirthas, holy places. Pious people travel to holy places to associate with devotees and to serve them, therefore serving the Supreme Lord. Sinful people travel to holy places for a different reason. They want to accumulate mundane fame and temporarily wash off their sins. They make their journey, but maintain their sinful propensities. Krishna's exalted devotees also enact the pastime of traveling to holy places, but they do so to transform these ordinary places into sacred tirthas, and to purify the contamination accumulated in such places. While there, they search after the worshipful Lord and remain absorbed in the metals of separation from the Lord. While there, they search after their worshipable Lord and remain absorbed in the metals of separation from the Lord. Thus they are intoxicated in his service. So that's what the Dham has an effect on the pure devotees, or the devotees who have the right consciousness. They develop a mood of separation from the Lord. Because everything in the Dham reminds them of the Lord, and which awakens the mood of separation. Okay, any other questions? If he commits Vaishnava offense, yeah. Now, if he's committing Vaishnava offenses continually, you know, like some people they just continue to commit Vaishnava aparad over and over. and they're chanting the holy names. So they think they're okay, but they're not. This is the first offense to the holy name, to blaspheme devotees who dedicated their lives to the propagation of the holy names of the Lord. So in due course of time, their sinful reactions will catch up to them. Lord Chaitanya showed two things. He speeded up the process of devotional service, and he speeded up the process of reactions. Sinful reaction. When Lord Chaitanya was there, those who committed Vaishnava Aparad got immediate reactions. In other words, when Gopal Chapal offended Srivas, he came down with leprosy. When Gopal Chakravarti offended Haridas Thakur, he came down with leprosy. When, what is it? There was a few more. When the persons who were beating Haridas Thakur, later all their whole family all died, including them. And Ramachandra Khan offended Haridas Thakur. He lost everything, including all his wealth, and he was put in jail. And the whole village that he was living in got a reaction for that offense. So Vaishnava Aparad is very serious. And Lord Chaitanya wanted to show the reactions. So now, if we're committing Vaishnava Aparad, it's not that we're going to get leprosy right away. But you'll get it sometime in the future. Because it takes a while. But Lord Chaitanya wanted to show that this is what happens. Therefore, he speeded up both the reactions to sinful activity and the benefits of pure devotional service. Those who perform pure devotional service immediately got love of God because of his mercy. So it takes us a little longer. But he showed that. So we have to be very careful that, you know, if we're offending Vaishnavas and we're still chanting the holy name, we'll get a reaction in the future. It'll come, guaranteed. So the thing is, we have to be careful. Now, if one accidentally offends a Vaishnava, that's not so serious, but still, one should make amends. And one has an offensive mentality, wants to try to, you know, some people like to criticize. They just like to talk about others' faults. They like to find faults. They like to take issues with everything. And then therefore, in that consciousness, they're gradually paving the road to hell. Because Lord Chaitanya says, I give my mercy to anyone and everyone except those who offend Vaishnavas. They can't get my mercy. So, you know, none of you are offenders, but still we commit offenses accidentally. If we do it accidentally, we should just be apologetic and very humble, and then Krishna will relieve the offenses. One should consciously be aware that one is not criticizing or blaspheming. There's six ways to offend a Vaishnava. When you want to hear the six ways? Okay, you ready? This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And this is not coming from some small personality. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Sixth one. The most severe form of Vaishnava aparad is to kill a Vaishnava. Obviously. The second is to blaspheme a Vaishnava. That's a little less severe, but for blaspheme a Vaishnava means, what is blasphemy? Blasphemy means you have so many good qualities, but I find one fault in you, and I make propaganda about that fault. That's blasphemy. You do so many wonderful things, but yet you have some fault, and I take that fault and I blow it up and make that your character. That's blasphemy. The third is to become envious of a Vaishnava. To envy them in some way or another. The fourth, less severe, is to become angry with a Vaishnava. Envy is worse than anger. The fifth is to not offer respects to a Vaishnava. And the last is not to become happy upon seeing a Vaishnava. So if you see a Vaishnava and you don't become happy, what are you going to do? Is that an offense? Yeah. So how do you counteract it? Pay your obeisances. So if you see a devotee and you don't feel happy, pay your obeisances. And then there's no offense. So, like that. So these are the six ways. More, one is more severe than the other. So try to remember them and avoid them. But you know how you can avoid them? Always be humble. And how does always be humble? Always be ready to serve. If we're ready to enjoy, then we're in a problem. If we're ready to serve, then we don't commit offenses. That's all. If we have a mood of service, then that's nice. That's ideal. That's our position. If we're trying to enjoy Krishna consciousness, then we're obviously going to commit offenses. Krishna consciousness is enjoyable through service. Yeah. So these are important principles. But chant the holy names of the Lord like that. Yes, Mataji? You have a question? Yeah. We can make discrimination without criticizing. And also, it's a very delicate thing. You know, it's a very delicate thing. We make discrimination without criticizing. I mean, look at the karmis. We can spend all day criticizing them, right? But do we do that? Well, we go crazy, right? They're full of faults. But a devotee feels sorry for them. They're full of bad qualities. And, you know, many of them are even envious of devotees. But at the same time, we don't criticize them. We just feel sorry for them. So have compassion, have sympathy for others. But make a distinction in order not to allow yourself to become contaminated. Because if you associate with an offensive person, you may also become affected by that association. So we stay away from people who are offensive. And just like there was one devotee in our movement, Jayananda. Now Jayananda, you heard of Jayananda? Many of you? Yeah. Wonderful devotee. If he was there and someone was talking about another devotee in a negative way, he would walk away. Immediately just walk away. And then the signal would come, oh, Jayananda's left. That means I should stop talking, because he would give the signal. He wouldn't want to hear any bad things about others. You know. Gopal Bhatta Goswami said, as far as I'm concerned, if a person is chanting Hare Krishna, he has all good qualities. But we still make discrimination between who we associate with. Therefore, we should associate with devotees who are nicely engaged in devotional service and devotees who uplift us. If devotees drag us down, then we don't want that association. And if someone's dragging you down, try to bring them up rather than you go down with them, you know. If you're humble, it's easy. If you're not humble, then it's very difficult. You have to be humble. I mean, we have it's hard even if you're humble. Because the story of Gadadhar Pandit, I just remember that story. What's his name? Balabha Acharya, great Acharya. And he used to come every day to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to tell Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about what he did. He would write different things, or he would come up with different realizations. And he would go to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he was proud. He was a great devotee, and he was a learned scholar. He was both a great devotee, but he had some pride. So every time he would speak to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya would say something to defeat him. He would always defeat him because he wanted to cut down his pride. You know, I can. So he kept doing it. One day he came to Lord Chaitanya and he said, "My dear Lord, I have written a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam which surpasses the commentary by Sridhar Swami." Now, Sridhar Swami is the what we call the authorized commentary on Bhagavatam, commentator on Bhagavatam. So when Lord Chaitanya heard that, he said, "One who does not accept the Swami is a prostitute." Because another name for the another meaning for the word Swami is husband. Swami also means husband. So Lord Chaitanya was using it in that context. So therefore he called Vallabhacharya a prostitute, just to cut down his pride. So he couldn't get anywhere with Lord Chaitanya. So he would go to his devotees and speak, and they would just walk away because they knew Lord Chaitanya's mood. But he went to Gadadhar Pandit. Now Gadadhar Pandit is so simple, so sweet, so gentle, so humble, that when Vallabhacharya came to him, he started immediately reading his commentary, and Gadadhar Pandit just all of a sudden was literature was very mild. People have mild natures, they have a hard time, you know, dealing with things like this. So he was just, he couldn't say to Vallabhacharya, "Stop talking," or "Walk away." He didn't want to offend him. So he stood there and listened. Now, in his heart, he was praying to Lord Chaitanya, "My dear Lord, you know my feelings. I don't want to listen to him, but he's a great devotee. I don't know what to do. I don't want to offend him." So he was praying. Now, Lord Chaitanya, later on, he mildly chastised Gadadhar for listening. But he did it in a joking way, because he knew the heart of Gadadhar. So sometimes that happens. We're put in a situation, and we find ourselves listening to something that we don't want to listen to. And we find that we can't get away. It's just, like, difficult. So just somehow or other, pray. "My dear Lord, I don't want to listen to this person. Help me get away. Do something." And then all of a sudden, Krishna does something. Something happens if you sincerely pray. But if we take part in listening to negativity or discrimination or criticism, then we become party to that. Okay. Yes, Prabhu, in the back. Bahuda. Bhavada.
In family relations, because the family is together each and every day. I mean, the family members are always together.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't offend your wife just because she's your wife. You can't offend your wife just because she's your wife. She's also Krishna's part and parcel. Familiarity breeds indifference. After we become familiar with people, we start becoming ordinary. Therefore, follow religious principles, even in marriage, and keep things proper. Develop a sense of respect for your family members, but also there should be an understanding of relationship. Each of the family members should know their position within the family, but should have love and respect for others. So be careful. You know, you can't abuse your wife or your children just because they're your wife and children. But they're not, really. They're Krishna's parts and parcels. So we have to be very careful. Of course, we have to do the needful sometimes. Sometimes there's need for chastisement. Sometimes need for correction. But everything should be done as a mood of service and respect. We have to practice that mood. Krishna is in the heart of all living beings, including your wife or your husband. Okay. Be careful. Yes. The offenses I mentioned, like Joe Gopal Chakravarti, like that. Yeah. Well, you know the story. Jagai Madai committed some tremendous offense to Lord Nityananda. And when the townspeople saw that, they ran and called Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya, when he saw what was happening, he called for his chakra. In fact, it appeared. And he was ready to kill both of them on the spot. But Lord Nityananda stopped him and said, "My dear Lord, in this age, everyone is like these guys. So therefore, we came to kill not the body, but their mentality." So that stopped Lord Chaitanya from using his chakra, but he was still angry. At that point, Jagai fell at the feet of Lord Chaitanya and begged forgiveness. And he was so forgiving that Lord Chaitanya forgave him. And when Madai saw the mercy that Jagai got, he ran to Lord Chaitanya. And he asked for the same mercy. And Lord Chaitanya said, "No, I can't give you that. You have offended Lord Nityananda. Therefore, only if you go to him and you get his mercy will you get my mercy." And that's what he did. So he was so apologetic. I mean, he was crying and he was beating his head on the ground. He was so overwhelmed with remorse. But it wasn't until Lord Chaitanya appeared with his chakra and they saw Lord Nityananda's mercy, how Lord Nityananda prevented them from being killed by his compassion. And then that changed their heart, especially Jagai's. So after that, Jagai and Madai, especially Madai, every day he was crying. He was so although Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya forgave them, he was so unhappy. He would go down to the banks of the Ghat, and he would give people rocks. And he would say, "Take these rocks and throw them at me." And people hated these guys because they were so sinful. So people would throw rocks at them, and he would pick up the rock and give it back to them and say, "Throw it again. I deserve worse than this." That's how much they repented after receiving the mercy of the Lord. So they were like that every day. They were constantly crying because they realized what they had done. But Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda's mercy was so powerful that they forgave them. So you can always get forgiveness if you have that mood of what we say, remorse, regret, repentance. In the case with Gopal Chakravarti, he offended Srivas Thakur. What happened to him was that he was envious of Srivas, and because Srivas was popular. So he wanted to destroy Srivas's reputation. So he took a whole series of paraphernalia that's used for worship of Durga, and he put it on Srivas's doorstep, just to implicate him in Durga worship. So what did Srivas do? When he came out the next morning, he saw all the paraphernalia of Durga worship there. And he called everyone in the town. He said, "Just see, this is what I do. I worship Durga." He didn't try to counteract the reaction, the offense. And he just accepted it. And then someone came along and said, no, Srivas, this is not you. This is just some trick. So they took it all away and cleaned it up. And then 3 days later, Gopal Chapala came down with leprosy because of the offense. And then he had to leave the place. And so he couldn't stay with the common people. He went to the banks of the Ganges, and he was sitting there suffering with leprosy. Lord Chaitanya came by one day, and he was suffering. He saw Lord Chaitanya. He said, my dear Lord, you are so merciful. You have come to deliver the fallen souls. Please save me from this leprosy. I'm so sinful. Lord Chaitanya said, you think what you're suffering now is bad? You're going to get this for another 10 million births. He walked away. Lord Chaitanya was like a thunderbolt. And he was just, he was devastated. So for months more, he stayed in that situation of suffering. Then again, after suffering sufficiently, somehow or other, Lord Chaitanya came walking by again. And again he prayed. He said, my dear Lord, I am so sorry. I have offended your devotee. Please forgive me. Lord Chaitanya says, I can't forgive you. But if you go to Srivas, he'll forgive you. And he did. Right after that, he went to Srivas Thakur, and then Srivas said, he didn't even take offense. He said, sure, I forgive you. I didn't even consider there was any offense being made. This is another thing. Someone asked me a question the other day. What happens if you commit an offense to a devotee and you apologize and they don't forgive you? I said, that's not very much of a devotee. Because devotees are always forgiving. Always forgiving. So, and then he got the mercy of Srivas, and somehow or other, Krishna took his leprosy away. And he actually became a devotee. But he had to suffer for a long time with that leprosy before he got the mercy. Because he didn't wake up to the reality of what happened until after sufficiently suffering enough. So in the case of Jagai Mare, it was different. That case was different. They immediately made repentance. Yes, question? You see some speculation. And then what do? You tell the person? Well, you should, when you tell them, you should be telling them in the mood of compassion and correction, not like, hey man, what are you doing? You know, you're just speculating. In other words, you shouldn't be harsh, because a person who is making a mistake, you try to give them good information. Sometimes they can't hear it because they're not in the right consciousness. So therefore you have to be extra, extra careful and sensitive to their situation. And say, Prabhu, perhaps, what you're doing is not right. I'm concerned that you do the right thing, not only for yourself, but for the benefit of others. So you have to be humble. Now if you can't do that, better not to say anything. Better not to say anything. If you're just too passionate and Maya, then nothing happens. You can't be like that. You have to be somehow, Prabhu. You call him Prabhu, and then you act very gently and sensitive to the situation like that. But we shouldn't get upset. Hare Krishna. Yeah, they always get like that. Something happens. It's like the end of the world, you know. Prabhu, you're in Maya. You call me master, but yet you call me in Maya. How's that? Prabhu. Yeah. Prabhu means master. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you become intolerant. And if someone is committing an offense or speculating, and you can't tolerate that, or you can't, and you want to correct it, and you can't do it yourself, just go to an authority. Go to someone who can speak to them, who's in the position of authority. So if you, that's the other alternative. Speak to them yourself if you think you can make, if you can make, if you do it in the right mood. But if you can't, then go to an authority and ask them to speak like that. Yeah. Not keeping the promise? Which promise is that? Oh, if you say you're going to do some service and you don't do it. And then so that person should be corrected, right? That's your question? You can point it out. A defense comes. No, it's not offense to correct people. It's the correct, it's defense to disturb them. If a person becomes disturbed when you're correction, then what happens? They're not corrected, and you become disturbed also. You can't disturb somebody when you're trying to help them. You're trying to help them by correcting them. So if you make it worse by disturbing them, no, that's not the good idea. That's not the idea. Some people are always disturbed. So to some people you can't correct. So you just go to the authority. You just go to the authority and let them do it. That's all. That's their service. Their service is to make sure things go on. They had the spiritual master, he can correct. Temple president, he has his responsibility. But temple president shouldn't be abusive either to those under them. He has to also be very sensitive to them. But still, he has to do his service. I think the problem is when we start looking for faults. There's persons who are always looking for things wrong. If you're looking for things wrong, you'll be busy all day. Not only busy, but you'll be overworked. But if somehow or other something that you notice something, then I think the idea is we have to have a consciousness. We're not looking around for mistakes. We're not looking to see faults. We're not looking to be the all-pervading super soul correcting everything. We have to be the humble Vaishnava. And if somehow or other we see something that is a digression or transgression, then we may say something humbly. Yeah. Yeah, I have that problem. Yeah, sometimes when I'm in the temple, I see the devotees and they're carrying on the functions and there's a lot of mistakes. So sometimes I go to correct them, but sometimes in the middle of the functions, I can't do that because it's not proper. Or sometimes I see so much that I get frustrated. And then I'll just go to the authorities and have them try to correct it. You know, because like in the temple, there's certain things that are offensive, and people just like habits of cleanliness, like that. A lot of devotees don't have the proper cleanliness habits. You know, if you see that, sometimes you have to say something. I think that's up to you to determine. And it's not one way or the other. In a lot of cases, you know, it's not your business. You look pretty happy. Because probably you don't go around finding fault. Those who are happy usually don't find fault with others. You know, we just, sometimes people digress. You know, we don't take it so seriously. If there's an offense being made in deity worship, then that's something different. You know, somebody eats with their left hand, so it's not so bad. Okay, anything else? Oh, speaking about prasad. It's 2:40. Okay. Sorry I took extra time. But it is an important topic. Because this is the basis of our happiness. If we learn how to associate with devotees, we'll be happy. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.